Is it warm enough in here for everybody? Comfortable? I just want somebody to say yes. Too warm. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you. Well, this morning we're going to be in the book of Proverbs. We're kind of starting something a little different occasionally. You know, if you've been here a while, as we go through a book of the Bible and we get between books, we usually do a few psalms, and we just have been doing that the last 5 weeks, and we're going to start doing adding to that a little bit. We're also going to do one proverb, or one chapter in Proverbs, and so today we're doing Proverbs chapter 1, if you see from your outline, and so we'll be kind of doing a proverb, chapter in Proverbs occasionally between books with the psalms. So, if you have an outline, you see I've entitled the sermon, Wisdom. Is it worth the cost? We're going to see how much it costs to be wise. Or does it cost anything? First of all, we read in the very first verse, it says, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. So let's, this is not... You don't see this in every chapter. This is kind of a heading for the entire book or most of the book. There are exceptions to in the book of Proverbs to them being Proverbs of Solomon. I think Hezekiah has some Proverbs, and there's another one or two that the Proverbs are attributed to other people. But for the most part, we think of the Proverbs as being written by Solomon. So who is Solomon? You help me out. Son of David. How do you know that? It says so right there, doesn't it? Son of David. Okay, what else do you know about Solomon? King of Israel. He's fixed to run out of answers here in a second, isn't he? Son of Bathsheba. Okay, David's son through Bathsheba. All right, anything else you know about Solomon? Had wisdom. Heard something about wives. Who said something about wives?
Had lots of wives.
Lots of wives. So makes you question his wisdom, right? Don said that. Very wealthy. Okay. He might have been wealthy until he got his wives. Lots of horses. Okay. All right. So it makes you wonder if the question, is it worth the cost? What, if Solomon was the wisest man, you hear the saying, the wisest man who ever lived or the wisest man in the scriptures or whatever, why didn't he always practice what he preached? Okay, so we'll talk about that a little bit. Next question is, what is a proverb? Somebody try to give me a definition for a proverb. For a proverb. A wise saying, I heard someone say. Anybody else have a definition?
Something the Chinese say.
Old Chinese proverb. Something to live by, a timeless truth. Okay? What? Which one? Timeless truth or something to live by? Okay, are Proverbs limited to what we see in the book of Proverbs? No? All right, tell me, somebody share with us what you would consider a proverb. Penny saved is a penny earned. Okay? We've all probably heard that one. Tell me another one. Hey, I've heard that one too. Early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Another one. All right. There's a couple that I like that I seem to remember. One is this, that a fool can ask more questions than a wise man can answer. Okay, what does that mean? Let's interpret that one. A fool can ask more questions than a wise man can answer. Wise man knows his limits. Okay. What about there's a. There are a lot of unknown things in the world, right? There are a lot of questions, unanswered questions in life. Okay. Okay, you're thinking awful deep there. Okay, what about this one? It doesn't take a whole lot of sense to ask questions or to have questions. Okay, another one that I used to tell Susan occasionally, but I should tell it to myself far more than her, but you can't save money by spending it. That's what I said. That's what I said. Okay, there's one that another one I like that you've heard me say this before. In fact, I could probably give you the first four or five words. Some of you could finish it. Sin is a monster. Y'all heard me say that one before? No? Y'all haven't listened. Sin is a monster of such awful mean, or mean is M-I-E-N, which means proportions. Sin is a monster of such awful means, as to be hated needs but to be seen. But seen too oft, familiar with face, we first endure, then pity, then embrace. Hey, I like that one. And that's one that, in my opinion, everybody needs to think about. All right. Proverbs. They're not just in the Bible. Life is full of little sayings that are given to us or shared with us that kind of guide us through life. And this book is designated to that end. Another thing about Proverbs, and you see this in Psalms quite a bit as well, but something called in Hebrew literature called couplets. And as we go through the book of Proverbs, we go through this chapter, and maybe not so much in this chapter as most of the chapters in Proverbs, but the Proverbs are given in pairs. It takes two phrases to make up the proverb. Or a proverb is stated in two different ways. Or a proverb is given to us from two slightly different perspectives. Or sometimes from contrasting perspectives. Okay, so that's very common in the book of Proverbs. Another thing that is very common is the context, the continual narrative of the verses in the Proverbs is usually very short. I mean, usually there's a proverb and then the next proverb that's given may be totally unrelated to that. It's not a context that continues out. Okay, there are a few exceptions to that. One is in the very last chapter, Proverbs 31, where we talk about the virtuous woman. You're probably familiar with that proverb. And a number of verses, probably most of the verses in that chapter, are one context, a continuous thought. It's the same way in the very first chapter. There's more continuity, takes more verses to get the thought in chapter 1 than it does in most of the chapters. And we'll see that in our chapter this morning as well. So, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. Second point on your outline is how are they valuable, or the second question. How are Proverbs valuable to you? How are they valuable to me? Let's read verses 2 to 6, and you'll see. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. So, these verses, these five verses, tell us why proverbs are valuable. What they can do for you. They can give you understanding. They can give you discretion. They can give you wisdom. They can give you the ability to make good judgments. They will increase your knowledge, increase your learning, increase your understanding. Does that sound exciting? It does to me. Hopefully, the older you get, the more you value wisdom. The more you value the ability and the information needed to make good decisions, to make just decisions. So, it goes on. Number three. Question number three. Do they have anything to do with God? Can you have proverbs that are just totally separate from God? Totally separate from thoughts of God, interactions with God. Well, on the surface, you would say, oh, yeah, you can. Penny saves, penny earned. What does God have to do with that? So, you know, in one level, you know, you might say yes. But look at verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now, we talked about couplets. Here's you a couplet. Two phrases to make up this proverb. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Two phrases that are set in contrast one to the other. Okay? The fear of the Lord is contrasted with who or what in the second phrase? Fools. On one hand, you've got a fool, and on the other hand, you've got a person who fears God. Okay? The person who fears God, what does that do for them? It's the very beginning of wisdom. In other words, wisdom, real wisdom, starts with a fear of God. Wisdom, the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of knowledge, has as its foundation this particular view about God. It's called the fear of the Lord, the fear of God. On the other hand, you've got fools. And what characteristic of fools do they give us here? They despise wisdom and instruction. What does it look like for a person to despise wisdom and instruction? Do what? Scoff. That's probably the most common and the most serious symptom of a fool, scoffing and mocking wisdom. Scoffing and mocking what is right. But the idea here is that the person who is wise, they understand that a penny saved is a penny earned. But they also understand that undergirding their whole life and their whole outlook on life is this being who is God. And their worldview includes God. Their understanding of any proverb or any tidbit of wisdom or whatever includes what does God think about that tidbit of wisdom? Does that go in harmony with what I know about God? And so your worldview, to really be wise, must include a worldview that views God correctly. So, that's number three. Number four, where can I find them? Where can you find wisdom. Where can you find Proverbs? Look at verses 8 and 9. My son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. It's interesting that the place Solomon tells us to go to get wisdom is to our parents, our father and our mother. Now, I believe, I understand that there are exceptions to that rule. I believe that there are parents, fathers and mothers, who have yet to give one useful piece of advice to their children. I believe those kind of children, even now as adults, exist in this world. And I want to say that that is by far the exception rather than the rule. At least from my experience and from my exposure to people, the vast majority of parents don't fall into that category. But I acknowledge that there are some. But most parents that I know, I've never seen a parent that was perfect. I've never seen a parent that didn't make mistakes. But I've seen a lot of parents who really wanted their children to do right. They really wanted their children to make right decisions. And for the most part, an adult who is 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old, knows a heck of a lot more than a person who is 14 years old, who is 10 years old, who is 18 years old, who is 25 years old. 16 years old. That's just the facts. Okay? I can remember when I was 18, I thought I had knew it pretty well, had it all together, learned everything from my dad that he could possibly teach me. And it took me a few years to figure out that he taught me some things I hadn't heard the first time. But the proverb Solomon tells us, here is where you get wisdom. And I should word it this way. Here's where you should be able to get wisdom. From your father, from your mother. The instruction of your fathers, the law of your mother. Now, I don't want to make too big a deal about those two words, but the word law of your mother is a little stouter word than instruction from your father. And maybe that's because mama carries a bigger stick than daddy. I don't know. But I doubt if it's meant to make a distinction. But here again, you see this couplet. He says, my son, hear the instruction of your father. There's the first half. And forsake not the law of your mother. There's the second half. What will be the result if you do that? If you don't forsake the instruction of your father, if you don't forsake the law of your mother, he says, this is what you will be like. The instruction of your father and the law of your mother will be like a graceful ornament on your head. And it will be like a chain about your neck. And that's not a chain like to keep you in prison. That's an ornament. That's a piece of jewelry. It is something that adorns you, makes your life beautiful. Makes your countenance attractive. If you listen to the instruction of your father, obey the law of your mother, you will be an attractive person whose life has value. Question number 5. Are they only for sons? Have you noticed something about this chapter? Verse 10 starts, my son if sinners entice thee? What about the daughters? Okay, I think that we can figure out very easily that this is not just talking about sons. It's talking about daughters as well, right? It's talking about anybody. If sons hear the instruction of your fathers, daughters ought to hear the instruction of their fathers too. Why does Solomon use the term sons? I don't know. But I can tell you this from my own observations. Sons tend to do far more stupid things than daughters. All right? They do. At least that's my perception of people I know. It's always the son who does something totally ignorant and wrecks the car or the truck or whatever, or jumps off the house or does something. The daughters don't tend to do stupid things, or as many stupid things. Just the way it is. Maybe that's why Solomon emphasizes sons. Maybe he only had sons. You know, I don't know. But boys tend to do stupid things. Now, I'm not a psychologist. In fact, I don't put a whole lot of stock in most of the psychology I've been exposed to. But I have my own theories, you know, about life. And my own theories about people. And my own theories about kids and interactions and relationships. And I'm going to share with you some of my theories. Everybody's entitled to my theories, right? So here it is this. Boys need to take risks. Okay, I believe that. I believe that God made boys. He made boys to be able to be, a man. You have to be prepared to take risk, to lead your family, to lead your wife and your children is a risky business. It's a risky endeavor. Getting married and being the head of your family is a risky thing. God built men to be risk takers. Now, God made everybody different. Some people are better risk takers than others. Some are not too into taking risks. Some doesn't bother them at all to take risk. Women are the same way. Some women doesn't bother them to take risk. Some are not risk takers at all. Okay? I know there's variances in that. But young boys, they need to go far enough out in the woods that they can't see the house. All right? They need to feel that risk. I remember when my boys were small, they want to camp out in the yard. Okay, now we don't have a history of having tigers and lions in our yard. But they were, I don't know how old they were before they ever actually stayed all night outside. But you know, right before dark, they're getting everything ready and they're setting up their tent and they're going to build them a fire and they've got the dog with them and they're excited. They're ready to take this risk. And then it gets dark and me and Susan go in the house. We leave the door unlocked because just in case. And at some point during the night, you'll hear the door. And next morning, they're in the house. Okay, wanting to take a risk, but not really being up to it. Young boys need to climb a tree as far as they can climb it. As high as it can go. You know, my dad told me stories about things they did when he was a kid. Most of them I tried. They would climb up a sapling, you know, this big around, get up there and ride it to the ground. That's an adventure. Okay? Don't do it with a pine tree or they break. Don't do it with a pine tree. I hadn't heard heard that proverb, yes. Ride them to the ground. Okay, he told me a story about him and his younger brother, and there's two other boys that were a little close to them, that they were all about the same age and all ran around together. And none of the other boys about their age, he said, would play with them, you know, very much, because they just a little rough, you know. They had corn cob wars. Anybody ever had a corn cob war? All right, the corn cobs that they rake the corn off of, you know, to put in the freezer or to give to the hogs or whatever, just got this cob. Well, they throw them out in the pig pen for the pigs, and you pick them up and just throw them at each other. Well, kid can learn pretty quick. You dip that, let that corn cob soak in the water trough, and it gets a little heavier, and you can throw it further. And he said when it hit you on the back, you know, didn't have shirts on the summertime, it just splat, you know. Doing things like that. I can remember when I was 8 years old or so, climbing this tree. I climbed this tree and reached up to pulling up and grabbed hold of a limb about big around my thumb, but it was dead. And it broke off, and I fell out of the tree and landed on my back on the ground. And knowing now what I know now, it knocked the wind out of me pretty good, but I thought I was dead. I thought I was paralyzed for life. And I got to my feet and walked to the house, which is about as far as from here to our church sign, probably. My mother was sitting on the back steps. She saw me coming, and I was, couldn't talk, I couldn't straighten up, I was just dying. And she didn't get up. You know, I thought she was going to run, grab me, and carry me back, you know, to the house. She just sat there and watched me. If I remember right, as I got close, when I got about as close as I am to Lori or something, I just fell on the ground, you know, just couldn't make it a step further. She still didn't get up. She said, "Oh, you're okay? You know, where did it hurt?" And she looked, and I thought, well, she's not going to help me. I'm supposed to go back and play, you know. So. But that's what boys do. Now, with those kinds of risk, sometimes they do things, they get hurt. Sometimes when they're little, they do things they get hurt at. The older you get, the more costly the risk if it goes bad. Mark grew up sort of the same age as another young man. The young man went totally the wrong direction, not listening to the instruction of his father, the law of his mother. Had a car wreck. He was drunk. He ended up in the hospital in Little Rock. Susan and I went down there and was talking to his mom. And I told her, I said, you know, I always thought when my boys were small, I'd be glad when they get grown, because I don't have to worry about broken arms, broken legs. But I figured out, now that they're grown, the worries don't go away. They get worse. Because now you're not worried about a broken arm. You're worried about a broken marriage. You're worried about a broken home. You're worried about drug addiction. People make foolish mistakes, do stupid things. So, Solomon says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father. Don't forsake the law of your mother. There'll be ornaments about your head, chains about your neck." Now, how do you balance letting your sons or your children take risk? How do you balance that with protecting them from all risk? Every family has to come to that decision. Every family has to figure out what that's going to look like for them. Like I said, my theory is, boys, you have to do it. Boys have to learn to take risk, to be able to take risk to some extent to become men. Solomon here in verse 10 warns his son about things that give me the indication that his son is probably grown. If he's not grown, he's close to being grown. Let's read what he says. My son, if sinners entice you, this is number we're on number 5 on the outline. If sinners entice you, or if people, wicked people, try to fool you, don't let them fool you. We're going to take this a verse at a time and see what it is that the wicked people will use to appeal to your son, to your daughter, to do foolish things. If sinners try to entice you, do not consent. Do not go along with it. If they say, verse 11, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood, let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. In other words, they say, we're going to hide and we're going to beat up this guy. We're going to kill this person. Now that wouldn't, you know, all the time I was growing up, I never would have been tempted by that line. Okay, there was nothing in me that made me want to go that far. I feared the law, I guess, too much. But this is not all. Here's what we're going to do. Verse 12, let us swallow them alive like Sheol, or like the grave, and whole like those who go down to the pit. Now here's the kicker. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. In other words, we're going to commit armed robbery, assault and battery. We're going to break into this place, ambush these people, kill them, whatever it has to do, but they are loaded with goodies. And they'll be ours for the taking. He goes on, verse 14, we shall fill our houses with spoil. Lots of goodies. Lots of things. Lots of gold. Lots of silver. Lots of money. Lots of guns. Lots of things of value. Cast in your lot among us. We'll all have one purse. We're going to do this together and we'll divide up the spoils. Every man gets an equal share. Appealing to the son to come in with him. Verse 15, what does the father say to his son? Walk not in the way with them. Doesn't say tolerate their presence. Says, don't walk in the way with them. Stay away. When I was 19 years old or so, I was riding around town, which is not a real wise thing to do either, if you want my opinion. I'll get sidetracked here a minute, but you know how? Here's what most kids want to do. Most kids want to go out on Friday night, Saturday night, whatever, and they go out and they come home. You know, you tell them you got to be home by midnight, or 11 o'clock, or 1 o'clock, or whatever. Here's my theory. Because they want to hang out with their friends. If you got some good friends, here's what you ought to do. Here's my wisdom for you. Instead of running around with them from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock on Friday night, those 2 hours, hang out with them Saturday morning from 5 to 7. You're much more likely to stay out of trouble. Is that right? That's right. any rate, I was running around town. I didn't know that tidbit of information at the time. I wasn't interested if I hadn't known it. I came across this guy that I hadn't seen in a long time. Last time I seen him, he was probably 13 or 14. He was two or three years younger than me. At the time he was 13 or 14, he was hot-headed. And his parents and my parents were good friends for a number of years. So I was around him quite a bit. Hadn't seen him in a while, and here I am, 19 or so, and he's 17 or so, and I come across him. So he hops in the car with me, and we go riding around. And we're going down the highway at Heber, north of town. You know where the Dollar General is, North Heber there? Right in front of where that Dollar General is. It used to be something else. It used to not be there. But it's headed toward the dam in my car. I was driving. And all of a sudden, it's in the middle of summer, and windows are rolled down. All of a sudden, he said, "There's that blanky blank blank," and starts calling somebody names. I didn't know who he was talking about. And he climbs out my window, the passenger window, till he's sitting on the top of the, you know, the armrest there, with his head and shoulders out the window, yelling at this truck we're meeting, cursing and doing things with his fingers, you know, and saying all kinds of stuff. I thought, good night. And we meet this truck, and it's a grown man in that truck. Big man. And he just figured out what's going on. I thought, what in the world is fixing to happen now? In about another minute, I had him back in his car. I had some excuse, get him out of my car, and I had to go do something, you know, probably told him some big yarn. But he was out of there, and I was gone. That's the last time I ever carried him around my car with me. Not because I was so smart, but I was at least that smart. I wouldn't want to fight. Okay, things I was going to do, I didn't want to draw attention to myself, you know. Stay away from them. If these kind of people come to you, don't walk in the way with them. Don't run around with them. It's pretty simple. Keep your foot from their path. Why? Because their feet run to evil. Their feet run to evil. They make haste to shed blood. Then notice verse 17. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. Here's your proverb. It's useless to spread the net in the sight of the bird. Now what does that mean in this context? Okay, I'm not quite sure. I think it means, I think most people would say this is the meaning, that you ought to be able to see through some things. You ought to be able to see through that this is not good. This is not going to work. I'm going to get in trouble. And it's just like spreading the net in the sight of the bird. The bird's not going to intentionally fly down and get caught in the net. You ought to have enough sense that when somebody exposes the danger or the foolishness of some things, you say, ah, maybe I ought not to do that. Or it might mean this, that it doesn't matter if you show the evil, you show the danger to this foolish person who's trying to get you to come along with them. If you say to them, man, this is not good. We're going to go to jail if we do this. He says it's foolish to show that, to try to show that to these fools, because they're not going to listen. Their heart is set on evil. Their feet are set to do evil. They will not pay attention to the dangers. Stay away. Verse 18, but they lie in wait for their own blood. It's not them that's going to shed blood. Eventually, their blood will be shed. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners. Now, we get to the last point. The point is, the comment is this on the outline. This wisdom woman is very forgiving. Now, I want to take a little trip, another side trip before we start here. I have heard in my lifetime, several times, of preachers who tell us something about God. And they say, you keep on sinning, you keep on living the way you're living, and the day will come when you will cry out for God, and He won't hear. It's a little late. Or God will not listen to you. Or God will give you up. God will turn you over. And you say, well, and then the verse that they quote is found in this chapter. I'm going to read a couple of verses. Verse 24, because I have called, and you refused. I have stretched out my hand, and no one regarded. Look in verse 28. Then they will call on me, and I will not answer. They shall seek me diligently, but they shall not find me, because they hated knowledge, did not choose the fear of the Lord. The idea is that you can keep on being a fool and living a foolish life, and someday you're going to cry out for God, and God says, sorry, I'm tired of you. I'm not listening to you. You won't find me. They use this verse to back that up. I think that that's wrong. Okay, and I'm not saying that their point about God is wrong. I'm not going to talk about that idea. Maybe God would say that, maybe He wouldn't. But what I'm saying is to use these verses as your proof text is wrong. Because these verses don't say anything about God. When it says, for they will call on me, this me is not God. And I will not answer. I will not answer. I is not talking about God. Who is it talking about? Wisdom. Look in verse 20. Wisdom calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. She cries out in the chief concourses, at the openings of the gates in the city. She speaks her words. Okay, so what you've got from verses 20 to 33, this is all one context, one flow of thought, is wisdom is personified. Wisdom is spoken of as being a person, a female person, a woman who is in the streets calling out. She's calling out to those people who are going to and fro throughout their life. She's calling out, begging them, pleading them to listen. Now that's a powerful picture that it gives in my mind. Wisdom. All around us, wisdom is calling out to guide your life. It may be through your parents. It may be through your uncle. It may be through your friends. It may be through your pastor. It may be through people at the church. It may be through your neighbor. It may be through books you're reading. But all around us, we are getting regularly advice to heed wisdom. Verse 22, how long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you, because I have called and you refused. I have stretched out my hand and no one regarded. So he's giving the portrait of wisdom going through the streets, calling out and pleading with people to listen, to guide, give them guidance. And there are some people who won't listen. There are some people who scorn them. Some people who mock them or mock her will not listen to what wisdom says. Verse 25, because you disdained all my counsel and would have none of my rebuke, then here's what will happen. I will laugh at your calamity. Your life will face consequences of what decisions you make. And the picture that it gives us is wisdom. The woman, wisdom, is laughing. She's laughing at our calamity. I will mock when your terror comes. When your terror comes like a storm and your destruction comes like a whirlwind. When distress and anguish come upon you. Then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would have none of my counsel and despise my every rebuke. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their way and be filled to the full with their own fancies. Does that verse sound familiar to people's lives, you know? They will eat of the fruit of their ways. All of us. No people. All of us can look in our own lives and in our own past and see things that we have done that were disastrous. They were foolish things. And after we did them, and the consequences began to affect our lives, we had begin to have to live with the consequences. Then we looked and we thought, man, why did I do this? How long am I going to have to bear the consequences of that decision? And it's like the good decision is mocking you. You're thinking, what could have been? And it goes on. And it goes on. If I were to, could remember every foolish thing I ever did, I'd need several spiral ring notebooks to write it all down. Stupid things that I did that I knew better. I knew it wasn't wise. I knew it wasn't smart. But I thought it would give me fun. I thought it would bring me pleasure. Some of us maybe are still living with consequences of our own stupidity. Maybe we're dealing with consequences of our parents' stupidity, of our children's stupidity. Our lives are touched. I would venture to say every person in here, your life is touched by the consequence of either your own foolishness or somebody's close to you. All for what good? Why is wisdom a costly thing? You would think it would be something we would embrace, something we would want. Why isn't it? It's because of our nature. We are sinners. We enjoy the wrong and despise the right, the good, by nature. It cost us, at least we think, to do the wise thing. Hopefully, as we grow, as we get older, as we mature, that's where part of where mature comes in, you learn to act wise. Hopefully, as we get older and more mature, as we age, these things kind of fall by the wayside. By then, we're convinced that it's not worth the cost. Wisdom is worth the cost. I want to challenge all of you. It doesn't matter how old you are. You can be gray-headed and do something stupid. You don't have to be 16. You can be 17. Or 59. I want to challenge you. Be wise. Do right. Let's pray. Lord God, would you remind us of this? not just right now, not just for the next 30 minutes. God, remind us this week of this message. Remind us this week of this thought of being wise. God, would you give us grace to do right? God, and glorify yourself through it and through our lives. Amen. Would our ushers come for the offering?